I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's going to be the NFL draft. I shouldn't say at some point. We know the draft is going to be April 23rd through the 25th. That is for sure. It's going to look a lot different. It's going to feel a little different. But at the end of the day, there will be seven rounds worth of players being taken and then the land rush for undrafted free agents. The Texans' best pick in the draft now is the 40th overall pick, a pick that they got in the trade with the Cardinals for DeAndre Hopkins. So, Seth, when that time comes in day two of the draft, assuming the Texans haven't moved up into the first round, when the 40th overall selection is on the clock, I know a lot of Texan fans are basically going to be viewing this player as essentially the replacement for DeAndre Hopkins. Is there a name that you can think of that when the commissioner, whoever does it in round two, steps up to the podium and says, with the 40th pick, the Texans select ... that the average fan will look at it and go, okay, I'm going to take a step back and I'm going to see how this goes with this particular player. Is there a player who could calm Texan fans down a little bit?
I think given a few of the similarities with one specific player and the fact that he might fall out of the first round where once people thought he would be a late first round pick or even a mid first round pick, I think T. Higgins, the wide receiver out of Clemson, might be the guy that people start lusting after. If T. Higgins is still on the board after day one, I think the biggest thing is that people are going to say, oh, wow, he competes for the ball and he's from Clemson. There's your obvious and identical replacement for DeAndre Hopkins. And I think that's where people have to be careful and A, recognize just how great a receiver DeAndre Hopkins is and that you were lucky to get him late in the first round like you did.
Yeah.
But B, that he's not a carbon copy of DeAndre Hopkins just because he's competitive and he's from Clemson and he's scrappy and he has great body awareness and all that. There are a lot of dissimilarities too. So it's not as simple as, yeah, hey, the Texans must just be planning on T. Higgins falling down the board and that's how they'll replace DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Now, DeAndre Hopkins was, to your point, he was selected 27th. So now he became the best player in that draft. If you redid the 2013 draft, a draft that had no good quarterbacks in it, DeAndre Hopkins might be the number one pick if you were to do a redo of the 2013 draft. So he became a lot more than what the league thought he was going to be. The Texans didn't take him at 27. Who knows? Maybe he would have fallen to 40th. You never know. If T. Higgins is available with the 40th overall pick, then there are obviously reasons why he wasn't taken with the 39 picks before that. And I like T. Higgins a lot. Very, very productive player at Clemson, over 2,000 yards receiving on, you know, about 120 catches or so over the last couple of years. He's played in a ton of big games, made a ton of big plays. If he falls to 40, what are the reasons why he's falling to 40 from what you've seen of him?
For one, the fact that he chose not to do the combine athletic drills was, for purposes of rest, that was a bad look in a lot of people's minds.
Uh-oh.
For somebody who's not, yeah.
Does he practice?
You can imagine, I don't know. Well, that's what I'm wondering. I wonder what Bill O'Brien would think, where a lot of people are thinking, oh yeah, the Clemson connection. Bill O'Brien loves people from Clemson. We also know that Bill O'Brien probably has really good info on guys from Clemson too, because he has got a good relationship with their coaching staff. So yeah, what exactly is up with T. Higgins where he decides he didn't have enough time to prepare for the combine and that he wanted to take off those drills just for rest's sake? And then figured, okay, because I'm going to have the, because I'll have the, my pro day, right? T. Higgins might be one of these guys that's really screwed by not having pro days because they're not going to have times on him for stuff that they really want. And there were questions about just how fast T. Higgins is. He's a long strider, so he doesn't look as fast on film as he is in person. And I think just the fact that he took that rest, given that Bill O'Brien apparently had a huge objection with how much DeAndre Hopkins practiced, is that like a deal breaker if T. Higgins is sitting there? And that's, and Sean, that's where it gets really fun, because I think if T. Higgins is there after day one, a lot of Texans fans are going to really want T. Higgins. If T. Higgins is sitting there, the 40th pick, and the Texans take somebody else, are people going to flip out all anew? I'll be cool with it. Like, I'll figure, all right, well, I'd rather have you take the best available player if you can anyway at that point. But will people flip the hell out if Bill O'Brien doesn't take T. Higgins there?
Okay, this is, and I'm going to point this out many times between now and the draft, this is Bill O'Brien's first draft as a general manager. Like, this is this is where the evaluation stuff, Seth, becomes really, really intriguing. Scary might be an adjective. It's one thing for Bill O'Brien to evaluate existing NFL players. That unto itself has been a bit of a dicey proposition with what he's paid some of these guys, right? Both internally with his existing free agents on the Texans and externally with free agents that he's gotten from other teams. I know it feels like Bill O'Brien's been the general manager of this team forever because it's been kind of a long 7 or 8 months from a personnel standpoint with this team. But Brian Gain was the GM for the draft last year. Brian Gain was the one who has Tytus Howard and Max Sharping on his ticket as pretty good draft picks, I think. This is the first draft that Bill O'Brien is going to be leading. And I'm, of course, really nervous about it. Between evaluating these guys, evaluating guys like T. Higgins or whatever other receivers, and how much his smart, tough, dependable ethos that he's creating factors into this, you know. But also, Seth, watching Bill O'Brien maneuver in the draft, I'm terrified about that. Like, Bill O'Brien with the 40th overall pick and what he might give up to move up to 31 or 32 to get into the first round to get an extra year of control over a young player, that terrifies me. Like, I think it's kind of, I don't think it's that tough to figure out what value should be on contracts for players, even for the average football fan that watches the game. It's like real estate. You just do comps. You know what I mean? Like, okay, well, this guy got that, so this guy should get this. The draft thing and what to give up in terms of draft equity to move around, I could see O'Brien getting fleeced in one of those. I could see a team with the 32nd or 31st overall pick calling up the Texans saying, hey, look, we know you need a receiver. These guys are not going to be here at 40. You might want to move up now so you don't have to worry about it overnight. I could see them getting Bill O'Brien to overpay and getting him emotionally charged on something like that.
Well, and I could see with Bill O'Brien, what we've seen from his personnel decisions so far is that he, if he were a baseball player, he would not have any problem leading the league in strikeouts as long as he also led the league in home runs, right?
Yes.
And look, with modern baseball theory and strategy, that's okay. It was he's not a guy that's sitting there trying to kill you with base hits. He just swings for the fences, and that's what I worry about, is that the trade for DeAndre Hopkins, or the DeAndre Hopkins trade, if you're going to try to rationalize it as like we had to get some draft capital back, but then you use that draft capital to combine with your other second round pick to try to trade up into the back half of the first round to maybe get a guy as good as DeAndre Hopkins, that's when I start to get really nervous. It might happen. I don't know. Yeah. I think that O'Brien understands that the number of draft picks matters. And
yeah,
that's why the Ravens have been so good at just kind of compiling draft picks and then flip them for other stuff. I keep saying this same way I said after Laremy Tunsil trade was okay. Let's see if he has a splurge of extreme aggressiveness for a while, because Brian Gain was so conservative for 2 years. Brian Gain kind of stocked up the reserves for a couple years in terms of money under the cap, draft picks. He was trying to rebuild after trading for Deshaun Watson, after Rick Smith traded for Deshaun Watson. Maybe this is where Bill O'Brien starts to parse out the draft picks a little bit more.
Yeah, or he just uses all the stuff that Brian Gain accumulated on hookers and blow. One or the other. Do you have any other names you drop in there at wide receiver other than T. Higgins that intrigue you?
Laviska Shenault, I think, is somebody that a lot of people think obviously
Colorado
will
kid,
be there.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing about him, I think he's got a certain nastiness to his game too, and he's more physical than T. Higgins. I think that's where people make the mistake with T. Higgins comparing him to DeAndre Hopkins, where DeAndre Hopkins is like violent in the short area, and he might not get great separation, but he's more physical. He's DeAndre Hopkins is 6'1", 220 or so, and T. Higgins is 220, but he's 6'4". You know, he's much more stretched out, right. So he's not like a DeAndre Hopkins or Anquan Boldin type. I think that some of what they lose in DeAndre Hopkins, maybe Bill O'Brien could see in Laviska Shenault, that combination of strength and speed. But he's got durability concerns too. So it's just in this world where it seems like practicing is paramount in Bill O'Brien's eyes, I wonder if he takes a guy that's been banged up already in college and might not be able to be relied upon, especially as a rookie, to practice in the NFL.
Yeah. Here's where I point out that Will Fuller played in every game at Notre Dame the 3 years he was there. So who the hell knows? Baseball and the players union reached an agreement on how best to handle the fallout from the coronavirus. And nobody knows when there are going to be games again. There's still a lot of gray area and a lot of mystery as to how this season's going to play out. Nobody knows in terms of the calendar and where the World Series will be played, if it's going to be played in home stadiums of teams that will have qualified to get into the World Series. It will be played at neutral sites. That tends to be how I think it's going to play out, just because of the season getting pushed in all likelihood into late October and early November. The regular season possibly getting pushed into October. The part that we do know, Seth, is that the players who would become free agents at the end of the 2020 season will still be allowed to do that. The players are going to get credit for a season of accrued time based on how much they played in 2019. So players like George Springer, Michael Brantley, bigger names around the league like like Mookie Betts, they will become free agents after this season, whether there is a season or not. But it's interesting because there are guys. This seems to favor the older players. Some of the younger players, this is not going to be great news for if there's no season this year.
Right, yeah, like Kyle Tucker, Brian Abreu, Forrest Whitley. Forrest Whitley, I mean, nobody would expect him to be owed anything. But Kyle Tucker, I guess, is one that is, based on his time last year, wouldn't end up getting that service time this year if there's no season at all. It pushes everything down the line to where now instead of the team screwing guys like George Springer out of a year of free agency at the end of their contract, it's going to be the coronavirus specifically. And I think a lot of the older players obviously are negotiating this deal or this agreement. The younger guys don't have much of a leg to stand on when it comes to complaining about it. And it's a bad PR look if you do at this point. So I think the owners and the players came to a pretty good agreement. Ultimately, some of this works out pretty well for the Astros so far, you know, and I hate to be like a profiteer off the coronavirus misery, but if you're the Astros and you're trying to rebuild your pipeline, you also don't want to miss this complete season, then not have guys like Kyle Tucker or Abreu or these other guys, you know, for 1 year of their service time. You'll end up having an extra year at the tail end of their contracts, where maybe that can be part of the replenishment.
I do wonder too, you know, in reading the article about this, I was reminded that the Astros are going to get a draft pick for losing Gerrit Cole in free agency. Now, it's not a great pick. They estimate it's going to be somewhere around 70 or 75, which I guess if we do the math is the equivalent of like a late second round, early third round pick in baseball when you take all the compensatory picks into account. But the thing that encouraged me about reading that, Seth, is we know that they've been stripped of their first and second round picks each of the next 2 years. My fear is that they're going to view James Click and more so Jim Crane, because we don't know what this is doing to the Astros financially right now, this coronavirus thing, other than it's not good. Like, there's nothing good financially coming out of this. I do wonder, and this scares me a little bit with the Springer thing, is do they view some of these more prominent players who could be leaving for other teams in free agency as a mechanism, kind of like compensatory picks in the NFL? Do they view these as a mechanism to start to, A, replenish the minor league system because you do get picks for those players. Now, these picks are not compensatory from the league. These come directly from the teams that sign the players. So the Astros are literally getting a draft choice of the Yankees for signing Gerrit Cole. Do they view some of these guys who they would, you have to give a qualifying offer to these guys in order to get a draft pick for them. But I could totally see them giving a qualifying offer to Springer. I could see them giving a qualifying offer to Michael Brantley. I could see them giving a qualifying offer, if he has a season like he did this past year, to Yuli Gurriel for sure. You know, whatever it would be at that point, 1 year, $20 million. Do they view this as a way to simultaneously replenish draft picks and get the budget in order?
Right. I wonder just in general, do a lot of teams start looking at this year like that, where so much is up for grabs, and like, is they got to start making decisions on how long the season's going to be, what the playoffs are going to look like? Is this a season where some teams kind of just figure, oh, screw it, it's going to be a reset year, or we're going to try to get creative towards thinking about the future? Because maybe with everything, there are so many wild cards this year right now, maybe you might feel like you're set up to compete for the World Series, except that there's going to be so much randomness involved that it's almost not even worth really putting all your ducks in a row for this season. So you can play, what, a 40-game season and then have an expanded playoff roster? Like, okay, no, I'd rather just clear the deck and try to plan towards 2021.
Maybe, or maybe some teams see it as a way to steal a championship. You know what I mean? Like, it's this wonky sort of season, and if we get, you know, we make one big move for a pitcher. I could see it either way, Seth. And as you're saying that, and you're laying it out, here's one for you. When's the trade deadline going to be? Is there,
right.
if you have a 50-game season, is there even a trade deadline? Like, I have no idea, but that's the trade deadline. The Astros, their two trips to the World Series were fueled in no small part by gigantic deals they made literally right at the deadline. Like, right at the deadline you could possibly make deals, they picked up Justin Verlander and Zach Greinke.
Right, and the trade deadline, all the international rules and the international players and all of that, you know, signing Yuli when they signed Yuli at that point.
It's
wild. I don't know when the deadline would be for international players or as free agents or otherwise. All of this is just completely up in the air. I also wonder, one of our listeners brought up, what's going to happen to, say, like the Astros' quest to win four consecutive 100-game seasons and how all those are handled in the record books? Well, they just, for things like that, if they only play half the season, will they allow teams to skip a year? We'd have to go back and look at the 95 seasons and whatnot to see how records like that are handled. But for stuff that it goes over consecutive seasons, or various players for a number of hits over consecutive seasons, are you going to be allowed to skip over 2020?
Yeah, my guess is let's say the Astros, they don't even play 100 games this year, but then in 2021, they win 102 games. Is that record viewed as four, you know, are they piling on top of their record of winning consecutive 100 win seasons? I'm going to say no. Maybe it has an asterisk next to it, but I'm going to say that it in the record books, it won't say the Astros have won four straight 100 win seasons. My guess is it's going to come with some sort of caveat.
I wish it would, just because that would be one more thing that we could say to Dodgers and Yankees fans when they complain about Tubgate. Is just the, by the way, four consecutive seasons. And they'll say, one of those was in 2017. You'll say, yep, so check the record books. Still says four consecutive seasons. Yep.
Hey, speaking of Tubgate, did you see that Bolsinger's lawsuit is going to get crazy delayed right now because the Astros think that the judge is biased? If you haven't seen this, the story...
I'm going to be honest with you, Sean. Yeah, when you wrote this down, I had no memory of who Bolsinger was.
Yeah,
so
Mike Bolsinger.
Yeah. Bolsinger, the pitcher that's suing the Astros. Bolsinger, the pitcher who is no good, who's suing the Astros for him not being a
right.
good pitcher.
He sued them in the state of California, and perhaps his legal representation didn't know. But apparently you get one mulligan in the state of California to file a delay or a challenge challenging the impartiality of the judge, even if there's no indication that the judge is biased, even one iota. You can do that. And the Astros have taken advantage. They claim that Judge Malcolm Mackey in California is biased towards Mike Bolsinger.
I think he's obviously biased because he's a 90 years old judge who's probably a
Dodgers
fan. He's 90! Yeah, he's 90. I don't trust a 90-year-old Dodgers fan. You know these 90-year-olds, they get pretty curmudgeonly about their baseball and the records and whatnot. So if there's any evidence at all that Malcolm Mackey is a Dodgers fan, I don't want him on this case. We need to get an Angels fan at best, preferably a non-baseball fan altogether.
God, he's 90. That means he could have been rooting for him when they were in Brooklyn.
What are you going to – you're going to cheat the old trolley Dodgers out of this? No. Yeah, I hope I'm still working at 90. That'd be awesome. That guy's got to be – I bet that's one of the most interesting people alive. Think about what he's been a judge through. He was probably a judge by the time he was 30, right? So 60 years ago, like in 1960, he went through all the race riots and civil rights and all that stuff.
Especially if he's been in California that whole time. Like if you're picking a state to be a judge in where you would have the most interesting stories, I would say Florida would be number one, but I think California is probably number two.
Oh man. Like going back to even when like the Black Panthers and the NRA teamed up for Second Amendment rights back in the 1960s. There was so many weird stuff has happened in California.
Here's the thing that needs to be pointed out with this Bolsinger lawsuit is that the courts are all closed in California right now. There's nothing being adjudicated. The coronavirus has basically shuttered the Los Angeles Superior Court. So,
oh, really?
The chances, this is something, from what I've been reading, Seth, this is something that would normally get rerouted very quickly to another judge. Like this is the Astros. My guess is that they're just doing this to try to make life as difficult as possible for Bolsinger and his representation. But this is something that now in this world that we're living in is not going to get, it's not going to get vetted out very quickly at all.
Well, and you know, and I was reading about New York City, however many officers have the coronavirus too, and the concerns that officers have when you're dealing with the general public. I wonder, do we have any stats on crimes yet? I saw Mayor Turner ask for the criminals just to knock it off until all of this
to chill.
Done.
He told them to chill. 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 Wait for the coronavirus to leave.
If there's one thing I know about criminals, that it's in times of strife, they all band together and they pull.
Right.
They do their share. Yeah.
Right, and listen to people in positions of authority.
You know, like, what?
Yeah,
I,
you know,
though,
I was going to go rob this liquor store, but Mayor Turner said to chill, so I think I'll chill instead.
Well, it's been tough for Houston because post-Harvey, the justice system got all gunked up. You know, there was a huge backlog that took a long time to dig themselves out of. And now I would imagine a lot of the same is going to start happening with these court systems, and you have to worry about county jails and how full they're getting. Every time you turn around, there's some other part of society that's affected that you didn't even think about how complex it would get. And the court systems are one of them.
So The Athletic, and specifically Jenny Dial Creech and Jake Kaplan, Seth, put together a Houston Pro Sports Hall of Fame. Now, we actually have a Houston Sports Hall of Fame. It started a few years ago. Some of the names that are in that Hall of Fame are in this article right here. But I like stuff like this, and my guess is it's stuff like this that's going to satisfy our appetite for sports-related content over the next month or two, and or maybe longer, till there are actual games to start talking about again.
Sean, did you see that the Minnesota Vikings? It was one of the NFL teams, the Atlanta Falcons. Their web traffic in the month of March is 10 times what it normally is.
Wow. So, are you serious?
Yeah, 10 times. Like when it comes to watching old clips and stuff. So talking about old stuff is all the rage these days.
Yeah, nostalgia. I plan on, I'll get to this Hall of Fame, but as long as you're mentioning that, Mark Vandermeer actually posted a link to the very first regular season Texan game, which you, of course, played in against the Dallas Cowboys in 2002. One of my projects for today is to sit down and rewatch that game as if it actually is September of 2002 and take notes on it, like the notes that I post after each Texans game during the regular season. So, I'm looking forward to doing that. I hear good things about this number 91 kid that I'm going to watch on here on this game.
That was fun. That was, well, Vic Fangio's defense was so awesome for nose tackles. That's what I would have told DJ Reader. before when he was thinking about going to Denver. It's like, man, you have no idea the opportunities he creates for you. So that was my first go around in that defense where I had a, like for a nose tackle, I had a ton of tackles, probably because just they unleash, they have all these different ways to get the nose tackle free to the ball. And it was fun. It was fun because nobody had any film on us.
Do you like watching old games that you played in?
Not really. I look, because if I have a bad play, there's nothing I can do about that. And it's just going to be there forever for the rest of time. Yeah. So yeah. I don't know, but I like watching some of the other, I've gone back and watched a few, and like in that game, just watching that first inaugural game, Jeff Posey had a couple big plays. Some of the guys who don't get mentioned a whole lot anymore. It's fun to see those guys and remember, man, that guy was a good player. He just didn't line up for him that he was ever on a really good team. And it's cool to see those guys.
Yeah. I'm kind of psyched to go back and watch it because I wasn't living here at the time. The first 4 or 5 years of Texans football coincided with the time that I was the one chunk of my adult life that I wasn't living in Houston from 01 to 07 when I moved back. So I wasn't here for it. So I have a different emotional attachment now to the team since I moved back and you know, we cover the games and I'm a Houstonian again, and obviously, and the work that we do with the Texans and so forth, than I did living in Denver watching the Texans from afar. So I'm anxious to go back and rewatch it just because I'm in a different frame of mind about the Texans as an entity than I was in 2002. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this project.
You know, Sean, the Hall of Famers that this Athletic article lays out, which are, you know, it's different in a lot of ways than the Houston Sports Hall of Fame, because the Houston Sports Hall of Fame has only been around for 3 years. It got me kind of excited for the fact that the Houston Sports Hall of Fame has a whole like backlog of people that need to get in that it's going to be, I wondered at first, like, okay, how are they going to do this every year? Then you realize, wow, there are a lot of like local Hall of Fame caliber players that are not in yet as long. And then you're also building up guys who are current players. So there's plenty to choose from.
Yeah. And the ones that are in this article, and there are 17 total players in this article, and the ones in this article are only from team sports. That was one of the caveats that Jenny and Jake had for this thing is, so nobody like Carl Lewis or Simone Biles.
And it's only pro AJ sports. Foyt.
It's only pro team sports are part of this. So let's roll through these here. Hakeem Olajuwon, Hakeem Olajuwon, Earl Campbell, no brainers. I want to circle back to Hakeem Olajuwon in just a second, Seth, because I've got thoughts on this as pertains to the Texans. Cheryl Swoops, who was part of the Comets for their run, and they won four straight titles. She's an actual MVP.
And she's a basketball Hall of Famer, so it stands to reason that a basketball Hall of Famer should be in the Houston Hall of Fame. Yep.
Yeah, and by the way, so Earl Campbell and Olajuwon. Let's see how many of these guys are actual Hall of Famers. Craig Biggio, Biggio and Bagwell both get in. No surprise there. Both actual Hall of Famers in their sport as well. James Harden, who I think is going to be a Hall of Famer someday.
No championships on James Harden, Sean. For you? It's all about championships. It's all about rings. He's not even good a player, I'm told. Yep, because he doesn't have any rings. No championships.
Well, you can apply the same thing to the next person, Seth, except unlike James Harden, this person might punch you in the face. Calvin Murphy.
All right, no championships, but wardrobe and personality supersedes that.
Yes. So. Nolan Ryan.
Uh-huh.
No shock there. He's in Nolan the Houston Ryan, Sports Hall of Fame.
Would Nolan Ryan currently show up to the ceremony, given perhaps a frosty relationship with the team for which he played?
Yeah. Can you imagine? He's got a whole bug up his ass about everybody in Houston because of the Astros. I don't think so. I think he'd show.
He would go in wearing an Alvin hat instead of an Astros hat at this point.
big Alvin logo on it. Yeah. For Mike Scott, we get to the first one that is not a Hall of Famer overall in his actual sport. In the case of Harden, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Scott is the first one on this list who is a Houston Hall of Famer, but not a Hall of Famer in his sport. And largely because he clearly had the best years of his career as a Houston Astro. Like if you took his Astro career and you extrapolated it out over 15 years, he would be in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Right. I think if anything, it shouldn't even be Mike Scott. It should be Mike Scott's 1986 season is in the Hall of Fame. You know, sometimes they put you know, a glove or a cleat or something. They send it to the Hall of Fame. I feel like if there was some physical version of that 1986 season, you could just send that off to the Hall of Fame.
I like it. Bruce Matthews, Hall of Famer. Brian Ching, who I think is probably, if we're putting somebody from the Dynamo in there, it's clearly Brian Ching. Cynthia Cooper-Dyke, she was also a two-time MVP in the WNBA. She and Cheryl Swoops and Tina Thompson were the big players on those teams.
She was the finals MVP for all four championships. It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, she was really good. Yep, she was really good. Moses Malone, rest in peace, but also an MVP for the and a Hall of Famer for the Rockets. Jose Altuve, what odds would I have to give you on Jose Altuve making the Hall of Fame?
The actual Hall of Fame?
The actual, not this mythical Houston Hall of Fame we're talking about, the actual baseball Hall of Fame.
I'd say at this point, by the time everything shakes out and by the time people that actually vote on the Hall of Fame kind of settle down and look at things realistically, and especially look at a lot of the data that shows that Altuve likely didn't participate in the scheme at all, I think that there's a 90% chance he makes the Hall of Fame. As long as he stays healthy and continues the same work he was doing before 2017, I think he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. This isn't like a Barry Bonds type of situation where there's a marked difference in those years. Because, you know, Barry Bonds would have made the Hall of Fame if he had never done steroids, and that's obvious. But it's Altuve is going to have had time to distance himself from this in a way and have a whole bunch of time after this scandal that I think he's going to make it. I'd say 95% chance.
Yeah, well, I think if he does what he's been doing for another five seasons, he's in. I think, you know, that's why I'm injecting the risk part of this thing is, okay, well, what are the chances? He's 30 now. What are the chances he starts getting? He's been more banged up lately. How does baseball and the writers, how do they internalize this whole sign-stealing thing? I would say 90% feels a little high to me just because you don't know what's going to happen. If he keeps playing the way he is, it's 95%. There's no question about that. My question becomes, can he keep doing this for another 5 or 6 years? Can his body withstand it? You know, he's not a big guy. He's not, you know, he plays for baseball, you know, plays a hustle and grind style of baseball, but it's definitely the favorite that he's going to the Hall of Fame. I absolutely believe that. The last three names in this Houston Sports Hall of Fame: Andre Johnson, JJ Watt, and Gordie Howe. No argument with any of those three guys.
Wait a second. You're going to give Gordie Howe a Hall of Fame career? Not, he's a Hall of Fame, like, obviously a Hall of Fame hockey player, but in the Houston Sports Hall of Fame, I don't think that you can do that based on a minor league hockey stint.
The WHA was not the minor league, Seth. It was the USFL to the NFL. It's not a minor
okay,
league.
Okay, all right.
For one.
So, okay, yeah. Okay.
I'll have you know that the Hartford Whalers played in the WHA before they moved on to the NHL, my friend. I'm not going to sit here and let you besmirch the good name of the WHA.
Was the WHA on the same level as, like, the AFL back in the day it was in football?
That's a good – you know who we need to ask this of is John McClain. You know what his first beat was when he got to Houston? The Houston Arrows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so we need to know. I don't know. I just went to this Hartford Civic Center and watched the games. I didn't really get into compare. You know, I was like 7 at the time. So I just know I had a good time. And Gordie Howe was on that team, by the way, too. So
he was the league MVP in 1974.
He was, yeah.
All right, then. I'll accept that then.
So as I went through these names, Seth, and I say this tongue-in-cheek, how many of these players would Bill O'Brien have traded? Because I think it's safe to say that if DeAndre Hopkins kept doing what he was doing, he would be in this mythical Houston Sports Hall of Fame and maybe the actual one eventually. And I got to just reading the background on some of the players, and this one I didn't need to read the background on, but Hakeem Olajuwon was way more sideways with the Rockets 2 years before they won their championships than DeAndre Hopkins ever was with the Houston Texans.
Oh, yeah.
And if you read about Hakeem Olajuwon was like publicly calling out the team. The team was publicly calling out him for faking injuries. they were in a bad way with one another. And I'm thinking to myself, man, if Bill O'Brien were the GM of the Rockets back then, he would have, you know, he would have traded him to, you know, to Denver for aging Alex English and a couple of second round picks or something like that.
Well, that's where the difference between now and then is so stark, I think. If Olajuwon had been doing that in modern times, where there's a 24-hour news cycle, where there's social media, where everything just builds and builds and snowballs, I think that they would have had to trade him at some point. I mean, That's the modern NBA, right? Guys do it all the time now. It was almost a foregone conclusion that Russell Westbrook could get himself out of Oklahoma City, and people didn't even make a stink about it. They're like, oh, yeah, well, he doesn't want to be there, and looks like they're done, so it's time to move on. It's almost just like business as usual by now.
That's a really good point. Like the NBA just accommodates these guys now. If you don't want to be somewhere, cool. We'll help you find another spot to land, buddy. You're right. And they would have traded you. Olajuwon would have had a lot more. He would have been much more empowered back then to publicly get his way out of Houston. God, can you imagine? Can you imagine this city without those two championships and without Hakeem Olajuwon, who thankfully the relationship was repaired and he's now one of the great ambassadors for sports in this town.
So I think the difference being that maybe they would have, and maybe, you know, I don't know how much the Rockets catered to Olajuwon's demands at that point, but you've seen with Harden, one of the things you do with your superstar is you keep them happy. You know, Harden's had a couple nice contracts that largely go, you know, the Harden contracts and extensions almost haven't really even been news because the Rockets have stayed so on top of it that they want to be sure they keep him happy. The weird thing about the DeAndre Hopkins trade is that none of this ever saw the light of day. You know, you heard rumors and people would say stuff, but this was never on social media. There was never anything publicly reported that DeAndre Hopkins and Bill O'Brien didn't like each other or didn't see eye to eye, anything like that. So in a lot of ways, this was like an old school personality conflict and contract conflict, because if DeAndre was asking for more money and wanted $20 million a year, unlike Stephon Diggs or Odell Beckham Jr. or anything like that, he never looked publicly disgruntled, you know. And I would say that to his credit, he never made it public. He never made a soap opera out of it.
All right, let's do some headlines, Jonesy.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, we start with, Seth, some news in the pandemic world. Stephon Marbury, who may be America's greatest ambassador to China. He is revered in China, Stephon Marbury, from his time playing in the Chinese Basketball Association. He's trying to arrange a deal that would deliver 10 million N95 masks to New York City, but he's run into issues coordinating a deal between a Chinese company and New York City. Marbury told the New York Post that he arranged for a supplier in China to sell the masks for $2.75 each, nearly two-thirds less than their standard price tag. Marbury told the Post, quote, "At the end of the day, I'm from Brooklyn." Marbury actually coaches a team in the Chinese Basketball Association called the Royal Fighters. "This is something that is close and dear to my heart as far as being able to help New York." He added, "I have family in Coney Island, a lot of family who are affected by this, so I know how important it is for people to have masks during this time." Stephon Marbury, Seth, America to Chinese ambassador trying to get things done to help people in New York, which is a kind of a mess right now.
Well, and also, look, he's long been established as a budget guy, right? Weren't his sneakers, were they the Stephons? Didn't he have those cheap sneakers that were supposed to be available to everybody? And it turned out that
Sammy had a pair. My son, he loved his Marberries. Starberries, they were called, actually, yeah.
So whatever these are, supposedly he was initially informed by city and state officials that they did not need the masks. I wonder if they were being polite about that. It was like, no, we don't actually need your budget masks. We need like the right kind of masks. I don't know.
His heart is in the right place, Seth. Good for Stephon Marbury. Yeah.
He's like, why don't you need these masks from Wuhan province? That doesn't make any sense.
Stephon Marbury's heart's in the right place, but you're right. I'm not sure that I'm totally confident in him administering, getting the exact thing that these very, very sick people, or that potentially sick people need in order to, or that healthy people need in order to keep from being sick, I guess I should say. On to free agency. Next headline. We are officially, Seth, I would say, into the part of free agency where veteran guys who may have been hoping for multi-year deals are looking around saying, well, I'm going to get what I can get here. And Ronald Darby, who not all that long ago, Seth, this time a year ago, was one of the names being bandied about for a team, a cornerback needy team like the Texans, going, hey, I would do 3 years, $30 million for Ronald Darby, even though he's coming off a torn ACL. Ronald Darby signed with the Redskins, one of the worst teams in the league, for 1 year, $4 million. That is where we are with free agency right now. And I would say this, sometimes the best deals are the deals you don't make. I would have been probably celebrating a Ronald Darby deal for the Texans this time a year ago. Glad they didn't do it.
Then Derek Wolfe signed also. And the notable story about Derek Wolfe was he apparently had a choice between the Ravens and the Texans, and he chose the Ravens. It's a 1 year, $3 million, fully guaranteed. I do wonder, I wonder how much the Texans offered him. I would imagine it was probably about similar. And why? I think it makes sense why you would choose the Ravens. Look, the Ravens defense versus the Texans defense, and the Ravens kind of regular season display compared to the Texans regular season performance last year. The Ravens are a more promising team and to the objective outsider, especially as a defensive player. So it makes sense that he chose the Ravens. I'm not overly, like, I don't think this is, oh wow, he hates Bill O'Brien, so of course he didn't go to the Texans. I think this is just a smart football decision by him.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see the Texans if they get in on some of these veteran guys now who are still out there on 1 year deals and start to fill in. They need help on the defensive line. I think they still need a running back. There are still places, there are still holes on this team that need to be filled, and we'll see if they go bargain basement shopping. Next headline, Seth, did you happen to see this yesterday? I didn't watch the actual event yesterday, but like many sports fans, NASCAR fans are jonesing for some NASCAR. Yesterday, Charlotte, North Carolina, Bob Weir of the Grateful Dead sang the national anthem from a remote location. Troy Aikman commanded the drivers to start their simulators. NASCAR's new normal resumes Sunday with another virtual event, the second in an iRacing series thrown together after the coronavirus pandemic stopped nearly all sports. NASCAR's 36 race season was suspended 4 events into the year, and Timmy Hill won the virtual race at a virtual Texas Motor Speedway, where a highlight came when Daniel Suarez was parked by iRacing officials for intentionally trying but failing to crash Ty Dillon. So it's safer to do it in virtual racing than Obviously it is in real racing. Seth, just as a general thought, how down are you with virtual racing as a quasi substitute for actual NASCAR?
You know, until I read this story this morning, I didn't understand what was going on. I'd kind of seen it on social media a little bit, and I thought it was, I thought it was just some people messing around or something. I didn't know what was it. This actually makes a lot of sense, just because race car drivers use simulators a lot and practice that way. Some of these sports and some of these events where people use simulators pretty heavily, I bet it could get pretty interesting. Now, I don't know, like, how far, yeah, like, I don't, I'm ignorant about how much it takes into account need for pit stops and everything like that, like a lot of the strategy that goes with racing. But the actual racing part, this might be pretty cool. This might be my slow roll into esports, if I can watch actual athletes like do the simulated version. You know what I'd like to see too? I'd like to see like fighter pilots who use simulators pretty heavily. Can we watch those guys dogfight and everything? That would be kind of cool. Actual Air Force and Navy fighter pilots.
My question is this. And you know where I would go with something like this, Seth. Can I bet on this? And I'm being serious. Is that something, if you watch this and you're a gambler, or you just happen to follow the story, because I can't find anywhere in the story whether it outlines this or not, were you able to get action down on this? I mean, it's clearly something that's not, it's no more or less fixable. You know, I mean, fix in a bad sports kind of way. You know, no easier or difficult, I would think, to cheat at. You know, or the concerns that come from the oversight people on gambling, then it would be a real race, right? Like, it's still hand-eye coordination and dexterity.
Well, you can gamble on esports, right?
Yeah, I believe you can. So I'm curious
so if, I would imagine.
If I'm telling you right now, if I can get down on it, I'll probably be watching it next weekend.
This is where you need to carve out your niche as an actual, like, a niche bookie. And you need to somebody to bankroll you and just start. Yeah, just start. But no, all this stuff that's popping up during the coronavirus quarantines, there's people are going to be gambling on all sorts of things that they maybe wouldn't have before. You need to take those bets. You don't have to look. You don't have to actually pay them back. Just, park yourself in parts unknown and just take the bets.
Right. And just take their money.
I had a friend in high school who ran a pool and kept all the money for himself after the Super Bowl 1 year. And
did he lamb it?
Like,
did he?
No, he was kind of a bully. And so, like, people suspected him of it, and he claimed that it was one of his relatives won in some other state. You know, like, a lot of guys will say, like, oh, I got a girlfriend, she goes to another school. He was like, oh, yeah, somebody won this pool, they go to another school. And he did that. Yeah. So it was a violation of trust, and nobody did the pool again the next year. But also nobody tried to fight him about it. Yeah,
not a formula for long-term success, I would say. Seth, next headline, back to the NFL. The Chargers, at least right now, are planning to ride Tyrod Taylor as their starting quarterback into the 2020 season. Pretty good roster in Los Angeles with the Chargers. Taylor is a quarterback who's had some success as a starting quarterback. He told Gilbert Manzano of the Orange County Register, quote, "We have a lot of talent on our team. If I'm the guy that would be calling the shots, I know for sure that we'll go out and turn a lot of heads." Seth, what are the chances that Tyrod Taylor is the starting quarterback for the Chargers in week one and by the end of the 2020 season?
I'd say in week one, there's a 75% chance. I'd say by the end of the season, there's a 25% chance. Seems like a classic bridge quarterback situation. So it's almost luck of the draw as to whether the Chargers take a quarterback high in the draft or if one of these guys, the interesting market's going to be when after the draft, some of these backup quarterbacks, like AJ McCarron's the first guy that pops to mind because he's local, but even Andy Dalton and some of these other guys are going to get freed up, and the Chargers decide to throw in their lot with. Would you rather have Tyrod Taylor or Andy Dalton?
Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, I'd rather have Tyrod Taylor too. There are some places where I might prefer to have Andy Dalton if everything else is in place, because he's shown that, look, if he has talent around him, he can probably be a better game manager than Tyrod Taylor. But if you need more than that, if you need somebody that can actually make things happen also, then Tyrod Taylor's your guy.
Yeah, I say that now, but you just basically described the Chargers when it comes to a team where Dalton might make more sense. Because that
their
is a pretty good roster.
But their offensive line is so atrocious that I feel like they need Tyrod Taylor to make the offensive line look better than it is.
That's a good point. Next headline, a little over 2 months ago, of course, Lakers legend Kobe Bryant passed away in a helicopter crash. That was 2 months ago. God, it feels like it was 2 years ago. Along with his daughter Gigi and seven others, the impact of the accident has been wide-reaching. And one of the more uncomfortable parts of the accident, Seth, is the rush to monetize the death of Kobe Bryant. And that trend started almost immediately and continued on Sunday when a towel that Kobe Bryant used during his final game with the Lakers. You remember that was the game where he scored 60 points that night, leading to the Lakers' win over the Jazz. He gave his Mamba Out speech. $33,077.16. There were 16 bids on the lot. Also included two tickets from that game on April 13th. So you get the towel and the tickets. The winning bid, over $33,000. For Kobe Bryant's towel, Seth. The memorabilia world continues to spin on and on, even amongst the pandemic.
Are people finding that distasteful? I think, isn't this what always happens whenever anybody dies? Like, they're immediately the memorabilia? I mean, going back, and it's been like that for centuries in the art world, that this is just what happens. The stuff becomes more valuable once somebody passes.
You know what else also always happens? People finding things distasteful.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
You know, like, I'm with you. Like, it's a fact of life. It's capitalism. It is what it is. Especially when the numbers get to be like this. You know, can you blame someone for wanting to sell the towel when you get offered that much? But
that's true. I guess I shouldn't compare a used towel to a Rembrandt. It's not quite the same thing.
Right. So So Kobe Bryant, $33,000. Final headline, Seth Payne in his time during the pandemic is connecting more and more with his family. As Seth, as you outlined last week, you're having your daughter Daylin interview family members to ask them questions, learn more about each other. I think it's a really, really cool exercise. Unfortunately, what's starting to happen is that Seth, my colleague, my dear friend, is getting bullied by his wife and daughter now.
Oh, I'm Seth Payne. I like to ramble on and tell dumb jokes.
This interview is over.
Okay, we need to play that one more time. I don't know if I set that up perfectly. Let me set it up one more time. Here is Seth's wife, Brandy, impersonating Seth, presumably at the end of an interview.
Oh, I'm Seth Payne. I like to ramble on and tell dumb jokes.
This interview is over.
So Seth, what's going on in your house right now?
I tried to make a pun and my wife didn't appreciate it, so she did an impression of me, and that's how it's turned into now. It's like, all of a sudden we're in a sitcom and I'm just the big dumb goofy dad that the kids and the wife all make fun of. I'm Raymond.
You're John
at this
Goodman.
Point. Like, yeah, oh, look at dad, what a schmuck, no need to show him any respect.
I will say this, Jonesy, if you still have it queued up, of the 11 seconds of audio there, I think she's got your laugh down pretty good. Play it one more time, Jonesy.
Oh, I'm Seth Payne. I like to ramble on and tell dumb jokes.
This interview is over.
Is that your daughter? Is that your daughter in the background laughing?
Yeah, that's Daylin laughing. I don't know why she had to make me sound so stupid, though, too. I don't think I sound that stupid. I don't think that was a very good impression, Sean. I don't appreciate you saying it was a good impression.
No. Hold on. I only said the laugh was the good part of the impression. I don't think you sound like she made you sound. Like, that's that. People do that. Amy does this. When Amy disagrees with somebody, and she, you know how people do that where if they disagree with somebody, they just repeat what they say, but they do it in a really stupid voice. Amy's the best at that. Like, if I say something that she disagrees with, she just repeats it back, but makes me sound like the dumbest person on the face of the earth. You know what I mean? Like if I'm like, you know, I really think that I think we really need to take a look at, if we're going to move back in the city, we need to take a look at a building over in this neighborhood. Oh, if we need to move back in the city, we need to look at this neighborhood. You know, like, just even just things that aren't even really hot takes. Like, she'll do that to me, but it's incredible the voice she uses when she tries to make me sound stupid. I empathize with you, Seth. You and I don't sound like that at all.
No.
Her laugh was pretty good.
She got it.
I don't know.
If, it was a
the laugh was pretty
good. Acoustics in that room were good too. They added to it. But one of our listeners says that he watched both of those simulated NASCAR races, and he said it was very cool. Timmy Hill won using a $250 13-year-old steering wheel, while Denny Hamlin has a $40,000 rig. That's Mike and Cy Fair. So the actual simulation equipment and everything it gets pretty expensive for this stuff too.
Oh, gotcha.
They're not just
sitting on their PlayStations with joysticks in their hands.
I wonder. Look, there's some hardcore NASCAR fans that are, you know, pretty rich people. I wonder how many. If I were huge into NASCAR, $40,000 for a simulator that makes it feel like I'm actually racing NASCAR, I might be willing to finance something like that. That sounds like a hell of a lot of fun, especially if it has any kind of motion to it or anything like that. That's pretty. Yeah. That doesn't seem like a bad deal.
No, that would be cool. Reminder: you're listening to KILT and KILT HD2, a radio.com station.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.